Good morning. This is Galesburg Live. Glad to have you with us here on this Saturday morning. Talk a little history here in the city of Galesburg. Coming up, Hope Cemetery. You've been by it many times. You've seen it. You've seen some of the big, the very big things there on the grounds. And it's cleanup days there. And joining us to talk more about it and a lot of history there, Rex Charrington, local historian. Rex, good morning. Thanks for coming in with us this morning.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you for inviting me in.
Well, let's first off start today. It's Earth Day, of course. And actually, one of the great things about having a college in town, even a couple of them actually with Carl Sandburg and Knox, is mm-hmm. that they've got a lot of fraternities and sororities and service fraternities. And a lot of them they like to do and mm-hmm. are required to do some public service, and right now there's spring day of service is going on too. So yes. You guys are actually getting some help from Knox College when it comes to
yes.
To
and I'd add to that also, they have a lot more youth and strength on their side than
there's
some
that.
Of us have been around for a while. And so we appreciate their help. We're getting some cleanup going. Started back in the winter. A friend of mine, Gail Macinda, who's an organist at Central Congregational Church. Got interested in Hope Cemetery because she portrays Mary Ellen West.
Okay.
And Mary Ellen West, of course, is buried there, and she has a friend who expressed an interest in working with Hope Cemetery, Heather Dixon. Heather Dixon brought her daughter Paulina on board, and Paulina goes to Knox College and is friends with Keegan Dome there in the AmeriCorps Vista at the Klein Center for Community Service at Knox College. And so there'll be some volunteers from Knox College there this morning. And there will be some, and then fraternity, the Betas, will be there this afternoon. And last weekend, the Fijis were there and cleaning up. And I didn't even realize that until last night. Martin Reichel had mentioned that. And of course, Martin Reichel is a secretary treasurer of the Hope Cemetery Association.
Well, I was going to say, you have an association. Is the grounds, is it a city-owned?
No, it is not.
It's not, okay.
The city rejected it back in the, at the time Linwood Cemetery was created in the 1850s, it was decided that the city would just merely form a new cemetery rather than taking over the old one. So okay. City government rejected it soon after the formation of municipal city government.
Well, as far as the cleanup days go, if somebody wants to volunteer, are they still
always
just
yeah.
show up? And what,
I could.
What kind of what time, like today, for instance?
Today we're going to show up around 9 o'clock this morning for the morning group, and then there will be another group about 1:30 this afternoon. So Martin said he'd be there just a little before 1:30 this afternoon.
So as far as cleanup you're talking about, whatever trash, hopefully there's not much, but
there's
weeding and things
there'll
like that?
There'll be some of that. I'm taking some pruning tools.
Okay.
My son showed up in town, and he's going to come over, and we're going to take some pruning tools down and work on some trees that we planted 30 years ago. The cleanup of Hope Cemetery in itself is kind of an interesting story. The Knox County Genealogical Society went over there in the late 1970s to try to catalog the monuments and read the inscriptions, mm-hmm. and it was so overgrown they couldn't find them. Okay. And so this stimulated a lot of discussion in the community. How did it, how did our pioneer cemetery get to looking this way? And so in the early 1980s, there were if I start naming names, I'm going to skip people, but Virginia Hinchliffe and Verla Guy and Gene Forbes and several others went out to, and I went with them, and I took photographs of condition of the cemetery, and we went out to various community organizations and got a lot of help, and a lot of help showed up in the early 1980s. And now it just needs, I say, some touching up. We've had windstorms. One of the things that most noticeable there and is regrettable is that Washburn Mausoleum, that it's right in the front, a very beautiful Gothic structure that's sort of a blending of a castle and a cathedral, and a big healthy limb came down in a windstorm a few years ago and knocked one turret right off the corner.
Oh,
of it.
Wow.
And
is that the one that kind of faces Main Street there?
It faces
the Academy.
Right by the gate. It's the
one. Oh, okay. Yes,
yeah,
all right.
It's fairly close to the gate, between the gate and the Soldiers Monument, and it mm-hmm. faces the Academy in the first row. And it's a beautiful structure, and it's beyond the realm of most volunteers. But I understand we've got some masonry people who have volunteered. It's a matter of getting that organized.
So cleanup day is going on, and it's so interesting. One really interesting fact that I did not know that I had asked you off the air if Hope Cemetery was the oldest one here in the city of Galesburg.
Yes.
In fact, before it was the city of Galesburg, it was there.
That's correct. uniqueness of Hope Cemetery. I mean, all the pioneer cemeteries are great, and I enjoy going to all of them. But Galesburg really does have kind of a unique history in the way that it was all planned and organized out east. Reverend George W. Gale had this circular in plan with an idea of how to fund a college, and he wanted it to be a manual labor college so people could work and earn their way through college. Didn't exactly work out, but they came here from New York mostly, and Vermont and other places east. And this cemetery was really came to being before they would have anticipated the need for a cemetery. Part of the settlers in 1836 went by way of the Ohio River, the canal system through down to Portsmouth, Ohio. The Ohio River, the water was low, and there were a lot of sick people in the area, and these people became terribly ill. And so they continued on their journey by boat, the ill-fated boat party, they're called, and got up to a place called Copperas Creek Landing, which is now near Banner, Illinois, if you're familiar with that white spot in the road, down just on the edge of east of Canton.
Okay, yeah.
24,
I've seen that sign. I was trying to remember where I'd seen it.
The sign's bigger than the town.
Near the Illinois River. Then.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's Copperas Creek Landing, and there's still people launch boats down there. Anyway, they got there, and then a hospital wagon train was formed to try to rescue these sick people. And one died upon reaching Knoxville, and two died upon reaching Log City. So they needed a cemetery much more quickly than they expected. So this cemetery site was actually chosen before the city was surveyed and platted. The cemetery wouldn't have been surveyed and platted.
Wow.
And we know the location. We think we know the location of one of the first three burials. Two were unmarked. Isaac Mills has a marker. But it's of a later vintage. It's a white bronze monument. So we're not real sure exactly where he was buried. But when they platted the cemetery, it was probably somewhere that was close.
So do we even know who the very first person buried was?
I think so. I think that it depends on whose account you read. And I would rely on, and I love her name, Serafina Princess Mary Phelps Avery.
Wow.
Yeah.
She didn't have a driver's license back then. It wouldn't have fit.
She was a little girl at the time. She came with the boat party. I never did hear how sick she was, but they say all of them were sick. You know, all of them suffered. But anyway, she does describe the events in this way. Let me check here. People from Knoxville aided the first wave of Galesburg settlers already at Log City to form a hospital wagon train. Upon reaching Knox County, three men died almost immediately, one at Knoxville and two at Log City. There are a couple of accounts that differ concerning the order in which they died, but Serafina Princess Mary Phelps, later Avery, gives her account and says that the man who died at Knoxville and the first one was buried in the cemetery was Captain Smith. I don't have his first name. They refer to him just as Captain Smith. Apparently, he had to do with the ownership of the boat, was a wealthy man, and his family then immediately left and went back east. The grave was not marked.
Okay.
So Smith was, according to her, was the first. And then Mr. Lyman died, and Mrs. Lyman and her family went back east also, and that grave was not marked. So Isaac Mills, according to her, would be the third one to die and buried there, and the one that we have.
First one that was marked.
Marked. Right. Okay. The one we have marked today.
Do we know, was it a particular illness? Was it something that was being spread among people? Was it all the same illness, or was it multiple different things?
Well, I'll tell you what. Back, you know, what diagnostics were in the 19th century, but malarial fever is what they refer to, and apparently, that was a water-laden, swampy area. It stands to reason.
Yeah.
Who knows, you know, under a microscope what was there, but that's what they called it in the accounts.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Okay, so that would lead me, and I'm going to jump ahead here.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the very last person buried in Hope Cemetery, and when would that have been?
Well, I don't know. There have been now some recent ones because there were lots that were never sold in the past. They're by the Soldiers Monument in the front, and so there are several people buried there in more recent times. There's a monument there for Judge Daniel Roberts and his wife. Mr. Rager, William Rager, Bill Rager, who was one of our caretakers after he retired from the city. And he developed quite an attachment for the place. And he's there among the more recent ones. Dr. Lee is there among the more recent ones. I think he was ENT specialist.
I didn't realize, I thought that it had been full for years. I didn't realize
it was technically until we decided that the ceremonial grounds around the soldiers monument would not be used for a ceremony again. And then William Brady, Knox College professor, he's there in the front. So most of the more recent burials are in that front near the soldiers monument, but you'll find a few others. There are still people being buried. Some of these, back in the older part of the cemetery, not as often, though.
Mm-hmm. Rex Charrington joining us this morning, local historian talking about Hope Cemetery here this morning. We'll take a quick break. 7:25, this is Galesburg Live. Talking with Rex Charrington this morning here on Galesburg Live. Hope Cemetery cleanup day is going on today, if you would like to help out, around 9 o'clock this morning. But, boy, what a huge part of the history of Galesburg here. In fact, even before Galesburg was Galesburg, Hope Cemetery was there, and a lot of history. And, you know, the other interesting thing, you know, you talk about maintenance and everything, and, you know, one of the problems, like you talked about the limb, the windstorm, the old trees and the limb doing some damage. But I never even thought about this, that, you know, sometimes you'll see, and I never knew the cause of this, that the headstone sitting there and it's kind of sitting crooked like it's sinking. You just kind of explained that to me off air. Tell our listeners.
Yeah, there are a couple of things going on there. Old trees that are long gone still have those roots under the ground, and they are rotting and decaying, and as they do, they settle. And this allows ground to settle. Also, back in the early day, they did not use vaults when they buried the bodies. They put them in wooden boxes, and those decay and settle down also, although most of the older ones would be settled pretty well by now. But we still see some evidence at a grave where a monument is leaning a certain direction, and it appears to be some kind of subsidence due to either the limbs that are gone or the old wooden boxes.
You know, were monuments, you see some really, really big ones and just a really small headstone. Were those kind of, I guess, like in any part of life, kind of a status symbol of who had money and who didn't?
It parallels the expression of the homes in Galesburg. Many of the older, larger homes, you'll find that they have older, larger monuments at Hope Cemetery. If you look at that, Galesburg had a great economic boom through the 1890s, and a lot of our homes, our fine churches, were built in the 1890s. A lot of our older commercial buildings, some still stand. 1890s up through World War One, a lot of money was spent on fine homes in Galesburg and fine monuments and mausoleums, private mausoleums. Down at Hope Cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting. And it's amazing to think some of the craftsmanship on some of these things, and, you know, at that time, tooled by hand.
Well,
yes. Amazing.
Yes, that's true. And one of the transitions in monuments, the early ones were made of marble, and the marble is softer, and those tend to be the old ones you can't read very well today. They're white in color generally, and they've not held up as well. The reason they were carved was because high carbon steel could be used to engrave them. But as the better alloys for cutting stone with the tungstens and tungsten carbides and all this was developed, then the hard stone, the granite, could be worked. Mm-hmm. And, of course, a beautiful example of that is the Soldiers' Monument right there in the corner. That's all granite from Vermont, I believe it is. And that made a lot of intricate detail in granite possible, or even the lettering of granite possible. So, yes, changes in technology can be observed and reflected in our monuments.
We'll talk more about the soldiers. Rex Charrington is our guest this morning. He is a local historian. We're talking about Hope Cemetery as it is cleanup day today at Hope Cemetery. It's like, well, let's talk a little bit about the history. Before the break, we had You'd mentioned the Soldiers Memorial there that you can see right there at the, basically kind of at the corner of Main Street and Academy Street. Talk a little bit about that and sure. and when and why it was erected and nobody buried there, but an interesting story as to when it was dedicated without even the monument there yet.
Right, the base of the monument. Yes, yeah, it was erected by the Grand Army of the Republic, which was a veterans organization of Civil War veterans. And many towns have Civil War monuments. You'll see one in the park at Bishop Hill and many towns when you go around. But October 7th, 1896 was the dedication of our Civil War monument here in Galesburg at Hope Cemetery. And the person who gave the dedicatory speech was Robert Todd Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's son. And sort of embarrassing, I suppose, for the monument dealer that the statue did not show up in time for the speeches, but they had to go ahead. All the VIPs were in town. You might recognize the date, October 7th. That's the anniversary of the Lincoln-Douglas debates, and there was a big celebration at Knox, and all these dignitaries were in town and been giving speeches over there. And Robert Todd Lincoln had agreed to dedicate the Soldiers' Monument. Interestingly enough, Carl Sandburg went to it, and we know what an admirer Carl Sandburg was of Abraham Lincoln, even at an early age. And in 1896, he would have been 18 years old. But he commented in his book, Always the Young Strangers, that he went and listened to Robert Todd Lincoln and went away with nothing in particular to think about. Not nearly as impressed with the son as he had been with the father, yeah. apparently.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Nothing particular to think about.
Nothing in particular.
So, but in that area, you said they used to have regular ceremonies
in
there?
The earlier days, the Memorial mm-hmm. Day parades ended there, and that's where the speeches were given and so forth, even clear up until, a fellow told me he remembered when he was in the reserves, in the early 1960s, they still went there. And he thought that that was about the end of it. But I've seen photographs of 1930s events and so forth. The auxiliary to the GAR was called the WRC, the Women's Relief Corps. And that flagpole was dedicated in 1937 by the Women's Relief Corps. So this continued well into the 20th century until even the children of the Civil War veterans were dying off.
The mausoleums, you mentioned the one earlier, there was some damage getting that fixed. The big one that faces Main Street,
yes.
Now, were those all the mausoleums all privately built?
They're all privately built, yes. In other words, the cemetery, only connection between the mausoleums and the cemetery, as it is with the monuments, the cemetery sold the land. The people used the land and erected either a monument or a mausoleum as they wish. Now, the big mausoleum is called Hope Abbey, and it was developed by a corporation that went around the country building mausoleums. This was a fashionable thing around, I think, ours started construction in 1910, dedicated in 1912, has pilings 21 feet in the ground,
wow.
which was necessary considering the wetland in that area, you know, being in the creek watershed there. That is not managed by the Hope Cemetery Association. It's now under Wells Fargo Bank. For many years, it was in the trust department at First Galesburg National Bank. And O.N. Custer, who was president of the bank, is also in Hope Abbey.
So is that one that's not just a particular family? Is it?
That's right. It could be sold any. That's right. Okay. Not a particular family. You bought crypts.
Okay.
In it, and it was a corporation that developed it, and then turned it over to a local bank and trust. And I don't know the story of the transition, mm-hmm. how it got put in the hands of the bank, whether that was sort of forced on them or you know, I don't know. But that's
interesting. As the bank, as you're going through your paperwork, look, we have a mausoleum, old one. How old is that one, by the way?
Construction began in 1910, and I think the dedication was 1912.
Okay.
Yeah, that was, it took quite a while to build that one. A lot of massive stone in that. If you've ever been inside, it's gleaming white marble inside.
Oh, okay.
And it has, the only lighting is from the clear story windows up above. Mm-hmm. And on a sunny day, it's just, it does kind of make you think you walked into heaven wow. with all the gleaming white around you.
You know, I can honestly say I have never set foot on those cemetery grounds.
Okay.
I know I've thought,
well,
you know, I've driven by so many times, and I've always interested looking. You know, I remember growing up, we'd, you know, in Oneida, we'd ride our bikes out to the cemetery and look at, you know, it was always so cool to look at all the really old headstones and everything, find the dates, and trying to find the oldest one you can, and different names and that. But I don't know why I've never taken the time to do that here.
And, you know, something I'll mention, and I'm sure you've noticed this, the newer cemeteries, we're never going to see anything like this. They want these recessed monuments flat with the ground so the mower can go right over the top. No need for string trimming or pruning. No danger of volunteer shrubs or trees coming up. And we understand why. When you look at Hope Cemetery and the amount of volunteer work that's involved, because many of these families have died off, moved away, we can't find, in some cases we find descendants and they help. But, you know, so many of these people buried here just, the families have vanished.
Right. Yeah. And so then there are a lot of similar cemeteries in different communities that's probably fallen into such disarray that beyond
Spring,
repair, which is
Springdale Cemetery in Peoria.
Yes.
They were actually logging the cemetery for profit and then abandoned the cemetery after they got the money out of it. And then left with no trust, nothing to work with, and they've had to come back from zero.
Yeah.
But Peoria's turning out, and they're doing a good job of trying. That's 270 acres.
Yeah, I would say that is a big, confusing, interesting cemetery there.
Yeah, at least at Hope Cemetery, we only have about 13 and a fraction acres.
You're not driving circles and up and down.
Creek bottoms and hills and savannas all that.
Rex Charrington joining us, Hope Cemetery Cleanup Days today. I want to start, and we'll continue on this after a break coming up, but some of the names of the people that are buried in there, and something I hadn't really thought of. Of course, you know, Galesburg, I think most people know about George Washington Gale, the founder, one of the founders of Galesburg, and there are certain other names, but I guess one of the things I never thought of, some of our street names here in the city of Galesburg, and that a lot of them were named after local community members, community leaders, business people, and many, many of those people happen to be buried in Hope Cemetery.
That's correct. Want to talk about that?
Yeah, let's go ahead and start on that.
Okay, well, Reverend George W. Gale's right-hand man was Sylvanus Ferris.
Mm-hmm.
And Sylvanus Ferris was a wealthy dairy farmer in Herkimer, New York, who was, his wife, I believe, was related to Reverend Gale. And he wanted to help. He brought six or seven of his adult children and their families out here. So the Ferrises were a big component in the settling of Galesburg, both in population. There originally were 232 settlers, and I don't know the number of Ferrises, but they would have been the biggest component of it. And going on down the list
One of his sons that did the Ferris wheel, or was it?
Okay, actually, grandson.
Grandson, okay.
Yes, the Sylvanus Ferris had a son, George Washington Gale, named for, for a reverend, Ferris. And then George Washington Gale Ferris had a son, George Washington Gale Ferris Jr., who was the bridge engineer who designed the Great Wheel for the Chicago World's Fair.
Got it.
And St. Louis World's Fair.
Okay, so one street, Ferris, but we can go, I mean, you know, Tompkins, Simmons, Kellogg.
Right, well, I'll just go down the list here. Yeah, we got West Street, and some people think it's because it's the west side of town, but actually it's named for Nehemiah West, one of the founders. And then we have Farnham Street, Losey Street, Kellogg, Tompkins, Chambers, Willard, Simmons, Waters, Bateman, Churchill, Ferris, and Brown. And these are all names that you'll find in Hope Cemetery.
Wow.
The people had to do with the naming of the streets are buried there.
And I had asked you off the air, I had never really asked anybody before the Churchill Junior High, and I didn't know if he had been in education or what, and you said yes,
he was
an educator.
Yes, he was, and he was an early Knox College graduate, and he was head of the Knox Academy, the preparatory school, for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And among other names that you might recognize, Standish of Standish Park, he's buried in Hope Cemetery. F.C. Rice of Lake Rice, he's buried in Hope Cemetery.
Wow.
So you just go around. It's a sort of a geography
lesson. Yeah. Rex Charrington joining us here this morning. We're talking about Hope Cemetery history here in the city of Galesburg. We'll take a quick break. 7:45, it's Galesburg Live. This is Galesburg Live. Tom Meredith, your host this morning. Our guest is local historian Rex Charrington. Cleanup days at Hope Cemetery, and what a gem here in downtown Galesburg. In fact, it was here before the city of Galesburg was here. That's how long the cemetery's been here in the city of Galesburg. And talk a lot about the history and some of the names. You look at street names here, and gosh, you can name, as Rex went through the whole list there. You mentioned West Street, named after Nehemiah West.
Yes.
Father to Mary Allen West?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And most of those people were, that had the streets named after them, that are buried there, some sort of community leaders or business people, educators, what, kind of a variety?
Some. In fact, probably more emphasis on the religion and the education. For example, Colton was a leading businessman, but we didn't have anything named for Colton until we got Colton Park.
I never thought, yeah,
over
with,
here.
With the railroad down.
Yeah, and here's a man very, very significant in the business community. Sometimes said Galesburg's first merchant, maybe he is, maybe he isn't, but anyway, he was among the founders, and he was a merchant. And a very successful one, and it was very instrumental in getting the railroad brought to Galesburg. So he didn't get a street named after him.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. You were talking a little bit off the air about some of the monuments themselves and the detail. Is there one, as you walk through, and I'm sure you've seen every one of them multiple times over your years of spending time there, is there one in particular that really, really stands out that you just like, if you're there, I got to take a look
at this and admire
the work?
Yes, there is. And it's probably the one individual monument that's most often photographed, and it's the monument of a man named Robert Bender. And it's right by the drive, and it's a filigree monument, filigree meaning that it's pierced all the way through, just like filigree jewelry has that sort of thing. And this is a very, very special monument, and I would think it would have been very difficult with the technology at the time. I think he died in the 1920s. He had an interesting life. He was with the Associated Press, and he was White House AP correspondent for 8 years during Woodrow Wilson administration.
Wow.
And so the beauty of his monument, plus his own history, and he's descendant of the Colville family, and that goes back into history here, too, with the Colvilles and the railroad and everything. But, yeah, that's one that draws a lot of attention. People photograph it pretty often.
Yeah. And Ed, you were telling me about some of the different use, a lot of symbolic stuff with the shrouds, for instance.
Yes, a lot of symbolic. Once they could carve the granite, well, even in the old marble, once they did some of it, but it symbolizes the drapery that they used to drape houses and so forth with in mourning after the death, like you see pictures of the Lincoln home in Springfield all draped. And they symbolize this in carving of stone, so it looks like draped cloth, either over an urn. Sometimes it's draped over the top of an urn on top of a monument. Sometimes the entire large block of stone has a look like, sort of, I suppose, representing a sarcophagus and has drapery over at least one end of it.
In the early days, where were these? Was there somebody local actually working, doing this, I guess, artwork, for lack of a better term, or were they being shipped from somewhere else? What was that whole process?
Some of each. The earlier days of the marble monuments, I would imagine that there was a more ready supply of marble stone. When we get into the granite period, a lot of it comes out of New England, Vermont particularly. Martin Reichel could answer. Mm-hmm. He's with the McFall Monument guy. He's my go-to guy on the history of monuments. But I know a lot of it came out of Vermont. There's also good granite coming out of Wisconsin and Missouri. There are several places you find good granite. We don't have it here in Illinois. In fact, this part of Illinois, we don't even have marble or even good limestone for something like that. So, yes, it had to be brought from a distance.
So you said, initially there were some unmarked graves, and the first one you said was it the kind of a marble or a headstone or what? I mean, before, what was it like early on? Was there just some, like, basically headstones or crosses?
Yes, simple, simple, very simple.
Okay.
Name, maybe son of, father of, something like that. Often they would give the complete date, including the day and the month, sometimes just the year of birth, year of death, and they were not very elaborate. Then we start seeing some of the earlier ones where they will have a Christian symbol engraved in it, a cross in a circle perhaps, in most of the cemeteries, and these Galesburg was founded by Protestants, and you don't find the actual cross-shaped monuments as much in these cemeteries as you would, say, in a Catholic cemetery. Mm-hmm. But there are many of them that do. Or the anchor is another Christian symbol that is often used. A palm, the heart and the palm of the hand is another symbol, and you'll find that over at Hope Cemetery. And when you find two columns with an arch over the top, that symbolizes a gateway or a doorway to heaven.
Oh, okay.
And I just recently learned that.
Huh, interesting. So when did we start seeing what you would consider an elaborate monument?
In the 1890s, the mm-hmm. Civil War monument is in that first decade of the hard stone carving. I can't think of any prior to that. We also have examples of a very interesting monument type called white bronze, and it's actually zinc. There are some metal monuments over there, and those were popular through the 1890s up to around World War I, maybe even discontinued a little before World War I. And this Isaac Mills, the first burial where we have a marker for someone, it's a white bronze monument. So we know it's a later monument, something of the 1890s mm-hmm. Style. And we have quite a collection of those. And Knoxville Cemetery has a nice collection of white bronze monuments, wow. too.
Pretty interesting. So do you, in your travels at all, if you're in a community, will you go look up an old cemetery?
I've eaten a lot of lunches in cemeteries. When I was working, of course, covering several counties, and I would take my lunch with me. I'd get more work done in a day as opposed to going into a restaurant. And if there's a cemetery, and then I'd get a leg stretch in the cemetery, just kind of going around places that maybe I didn't know anyone, but just to see what was there, I would definitely do that.
Yeah, well, I guess if you're looking for a history lesson in Galesburg, that's a great place to start.
It really is. You can, that along with a little bit of reading, and you really mm-hmm. can get an appreciation for the development of the city. We have given tours pertaining to the Civil War veterans buried there, of whom we have many, including one of the 54th Massachusetts, the Colored Regiment that was in that movie Glory. Mm-hmm. And we have given tours pertaining to Knox College with all the Knox College presidents, faculty members, trustees, an alumni buried there, and I'm working on one for Railroad Days. I don't want it to be a big tour this year. This was kind of a pilot project on the railroaders of Hope Cemetery. Mm-hmm. That would be both the financiers and also people who worked on the road or in the shops, any connection to the railroads.
Where did your love for local history come from? I know you just told us off the air your family's been here in Knox County, so 1841,
on the east side of the county. So, and I grew up with it. My parents were older parents, and I had much older uncles. My dad was the baby in the family. I had uncles who were in World War I. Mm-hmm. And I grew up hearing a lot about what times were like in their day and so forth, and it fascinated me. I just developed an interest in it. My uncle had a fairly nice set of county histories, and I would borrow a history from him. Really, about 15 years old is when I really started getting interested in this. And I found more that Knox County and Galesburg has a very, very unique and very interesting history.
Absolutely. Well, we're glad that that you got into it, that's for sure, because there's a few people like you around here, Tom Wilson, Harry Buckley, and we love talking to you and finding out things that always find out something new and interesting that I didn't know.
Well, thank you for having us on, Tom.
All right. Again, let's mention cleanup days again at Hope Cemetery if you'd like to help out around 9 o'clock this morning.
And this is not the end. If you don't get here today, don't worry. But if you do come today, bring tools or whatever you can. We'll try to put you to work. We may have more volunteers today than we know what to do with, but that's not a problem. We'll give you a rain check and ask you to come back. But if you have pruning tools or a lawn rake or anything you could bring to help, that would be great.
And it's going to be a perfect day for it, that's for
sure. It is. Beautiful day.
Rex Charrington, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Tom, and thank you very much. We appreciate it.
It is 8 o'clock, Galesburg Live. Our guest coming up in the next hour, Jim Hankus, owner of Thrushwood Farms. They're celebrating their 40th anniversary coming up next month. Talk about that, the history of Thrushwood Farms, and grilling some meat and all kind of stuff on the way next. It is 8 o'clock. News is on the way next.